Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in October's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1. Pediatric Delirium and All-Cause PICU Readmissions Within 1 Year by Pilato et al. Objectives. Delirium in critically ill children is associated with increased in-hospital morbidity and mortality. Little is known about the lingering effects of pediatric delirium in survivors after hospital discharge. The primary objective of this study was to determine whether children with delirium would have a higher likelihood of all-cause PICU readmission within 1 calendar year when compared to children without delirium. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting, tertiary care mixed PICU at an urban academic medical center. Patients. Index admissions included all children admitted between September 2014 and August 2015. For each index admission, any readmission occurring within 1 year after PICU discharge was captured. Intervention. Every child was screened for delirium daily throughout the PICU stay. Measurements and main results. Among 1,145 index patients, 166 children, or 14.5%, were readmitted at least once. Bivariate analyses compared patients readmitted within 1 year of discharge with those not readmitted. Complex chronic conditions, increased severity of illness, longer PICU length of stay, need for mechanical ventilation, age less than 6 months old, and a diagnosis of delirium were all associated with subsequent readmission. A multivariable logistic regression model was constructed to describe adjusted odds ratios for readmission. The primary exposure variable was number of delirium days. After controlling for confounders, critically ill children who experienced greater than 2 delirium days on index admission were more than twice as likely to be readmitted. With the adjusted odds ratio of 2.2, confidence interval of 1.1 to 4.4, and p-value of 0.023, a dose-response relationship was demonstrated as children with longer duration of delirium had increased odds of readmission. Conclusions. In this cohort, delirium duration was an independent risk factor for readmission in critically ill children. Future research is needed to determine if decreasing prevalence of delirium during hospitalization can decrease need for PICU readmission. Abstract 2, prophylactic enoxaparin against catheter-associated thrombosis in postoperative cardiac children, an interrupted time series analysis by Centers et al. Objectives. The effectiveness of pharmacologic prophylaxis against catheter-associated thrombosis in children is unclear. We evaluated the compliance and outcomes associated with a prophylactic enoxaparin protocol in postoperative cardiac children. Design. The protocol was implemented as a quality improvement initiative and then analyzed using interrupted time series method. Data collected from November 2014 to December 2018 were divided into pre-protocol, which was period 1, protocol implementation, which was period 2, and protocol revision, which was period 3. Setting, a 12-bed academic pediatric cardiac ICU. Patients, children less than or equal to 18 years old with congenital heart disease admitted postoperatively with central venous catheter in situ for greater than or equal to 1 day. Interventions. Before 2016, prophylactic enoxaparin was administered according to physician preference. In January 2016, an enoxaparin protocol was implemented with a goal anti-10A range of 0.25 to 0.49 international units per milliliter. Protocol was revised in February 2017 to increase the starting dose by 25% for infants less than 1 year old. Measurements and main results. We analyzed 780 hospitalizations from 636 children. Median percentage of catheter days on prophylactic enoxaparin by period was 33% in period 1 or the pre-protocol period, with an interquartile range of 23 to 47%, 42% in period 2 or the protocol implementation period with an interquartile range of 30 to 51%, and 38% in the protocol revision period or period 3 with an interquartile range of 35 to 52%. Percentage of catheter days on enoxaparin showed immediate increase of 90% between periods 1 and 2 with a 95% confidence interval of 17 to 210% and sustained increase of 2% between periods 2 and 3 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.3 to 4%. Median rates of thrombosis per 1,000 catheter days were 5.8 in period 1 with an interquartile range of 0 to 9.3, 3.8 in period 2 with an interquartile range of 0 to 12, and 0 in period 3 with an interquartile range of 0 to 5.3. Rate of thrombosis showed immediate decrease of 67% between periods 1 and 2 with a 95% confidence interval of 12 to 87% and sustained decrease of 11% between periods 1 and 3 with a 95% confidence interval of 2 to 18%. In conclusion, the temporal association between increase in percentage of catheter days on enoxaparin and decrease in rate of thrombosis suggests the effectiveness of prophylactic enoxaparin. Abstract 3. Sodium bicarbonate use during pediatric cardiopulmonary resuscitation, a secondary analysis of the ICU Resuscitation Project Trial by Cashin et al. Objectives. To evaluate associations between sodium bicarbonate use and outcomes during pediatric in-hospital cardiac arrest. Design. Pre-specified secondary analysis of a prospective multicenter cluster randomized interventional trial. Setting. 18 participating ICUs of the ICU Resuscitation Project. Patients. Children less than or equal to 18 years old and greater than or equal to 37 weeks post-conceptual age who received chest compressions of any duration from October 2016 to March 2021. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Child and event characteristics, pre-arrest laboratory values from 2 to 6 hours prior to pediatric in-hospital cardiac arrest, pre- and intra-arrest hemodynamics, and outcomes were collected. In a propensity score-weighted cohort, the relationships between sodium bicarbonate use and outcomes were assessed. The primary outcome was survival to hospital discharge. Secondary outcomes included return of spontaneous circulation and survival to hospital discharge with favorable neurologic outcome. Of 1,100 index cardiopulmonary resuscitation events, median age was 0.63 years, with an interquartile range of 0.19 to 3.81 years. 528 or 48% received sodium bicarbonate. 773 or 70.3% achieved return of spontaneous circulation. 642 or 58.4% survived to hospital discharge, and 596 or 54.2% survived to hospital discharge with favorable neurologic outcome. Among the weighted cohort, sodium bicarbonate use was associated with lower survival to hospital discharge rate with an adjusted odds ratio of 0.7, a 95% confidence interval of 0.54 to 0.92, and a p-value equal to 0.01, and sodium bicarbonate use was associated with lower survival to hospital discharge with a favorable neurologic outcome rate, with an adjusted odds ratio of 0.69, a 95% confidence interval of 0.53 to 0.91, and a p-value equal to 0.007. Sodium bicarbonate use was not associated with return of spontaneous circulation, with an adjusted odds ratio of 0.91, a 95% confidence interval of 0.62 to 1.34, and a p-value equal to 0.621. Conclusions. In this propensity-weighted multicenter cohort study of pediatric in-hospital cardiac arrest, sodium bicarbonate use was common and associated with lower rates of survival to hospital discharge. Abstract 4. Early peritoneal dialysis and postoperative outcomes in infants after pediatric cardiac surgery, a systematic review and meta-analysis by Namachivian et al. Objective. Peritoneal dialysis is used in several cardiac surgical units after cardiac surgery, and early initiation of peritoneal dialysis after surgery may have the potential to influence postoperative outcomes. This systematic review and meta-analysis aims to summarize the evidence for the association between early peritoneal dialysis after cardiac surgery and postoperative outcomes. Data sources: Medline, Embase, and PubMed from 1981 to November 1, 2021. Study selection: observational studies and randomized trials reporting on early peritoneal dialysis after pediatric cardiac surgery. Data extraction: random effects meta-analysis was used to estimate the pooled odds ratio and their 95% confidence intervals for postoperative mortality, and pooled mean difference and 95% confidence intervals for duration of mechanical ventilation and ICU length of stay. Data synthesis. We identified 9 studies from the systematic review, and 5 were considered suitable for meta-analysis. Early initiation of peritoneal dialysis after cardiac surgery was associated with a reduction in postoperative mortality with an odds ratio of 0.43 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.23 to 0.8, the number of estimates was equal to 4. Early commencement of peritoneal dialysis shortened duration of mechanical ventilation, with a mean difference of negative 1.09 days and a 95% confidence interval of negative 1.86 to negative 0.33 days, an I-squared value of 56.1%, and a p-value equal to 0.06. Early commencement of peritoneal dialysis also shortened intensive care length of stay, with a mean difference of negative 2.46 days and a 95% confidence interval of negative 3.57 to negative 1.3 days, with an I-squared value of 18.7% and a p-value equal to 0.3. All three estimates had broad 95% prediction intervals crossing null and denoting major heterogeneity between studies and wide range of possible study estimates in similar future studies. Overall, studies reporting on the effects of early peritoneal dialysis included only a subset of infants undergoing cardiac surgery, which were typically high-risk infants, so selection bias may be a major issue in published studies. Conclusions. This review suggests that early initiation of peritoneal dialysis may be associated with beneficial postoperative outcomes in infants after cardiac surgery. However, these results were based on studies of varying qualities and risk of bias. Early identification of high-risk infants after cardiac surgery is important so that prevention or early mitigation strategies can be applied to this cohort. Future prospective studies in high-risk populations are needed to study the role of early peritoneal dialysis in influencing postoperative outcomes. Abstract 5. Long-term pulmonary outcomes in children mechanically ventilated for severe bronchiolitis by DeSanneville et al. Objectives. Bronchiolitis is a common indication for mechanical ventilation in the PICU. Both bronchiolitis and invasive mechanical ventilation may cause adverse long-term pulmonary outcomes. This study investigates children with a history of invasive mechanical ventilation for bronchiolitis, addressing 1. The extent, 2. Potential explanatory factors, and 3. Possible impact on daily life activities of adverse long-term pulmonary outcomes. The design was a single-center cohort study. The setting was an outpatient PICU follow-up clinic. Patients included children 6 to 12 years old with a history of invasive mechanical ventilation for bronchiolitis when they were less than 2 years old. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Long-term pulmonary outcomes were assessed by a standardized questionnaire and by spirometry. 19 out of 74 included children, or 26%, had adverse long-term pulmonary outcomes, of whom the majority had asthma, 14 of 74, or 19%. By logistic regression analysis, we assessed whether background characteristics and PICU-related variables were associated with long-term pulmonary outcomes. In general, we failed to identify any explanatory factors associated with adverse long-term pulmonary outcomes. Nonetheless, atopic disease in family and longer duration of invasive mechanical ventilation were associated with greater odds of having asthma at follow-up. The odds ratio for atopic disease in family was 6.4, with a 95% confidence interval of 1.2 to 36, and the odds ratio for duration of invasive mechanical ventilation was 1.3, with a 95% confidence interval of 1 to 1.7. Adverse pulmonary outcome at follow-up was associated with more frequent use of pulmonary medication after PICU discharge. In comparison with those without adverse pulmonary outcomes, we did not identify any difference in frequency of sports performance or school absenteeism. Conclusions. In this single-center cohort, 1/4 of the children attending follow-up with a history of invasive mechanical ventilation for bronchiolitis had adverse, mostly previously undetected, long-term pulmonary outcomes at 6 to 12 years. Atopic disease in family and longer duration of invasive mechanical ventilation were associated with presence of asthma. The presence of adverse pulmonary outcomes was associated with more frequent use of pulmonary medication after PICU discharge. Abstract 6. Treatment algorithm for patients with von Willebrand syndrome type 2A and congenital heart disease. A treatment algorithm may reduce perioperative blood loss in children with congenital heart disease by Wolf et al. Objectives. In children with congenital heart disease, excessive perioperative bleeding is associated with increased morbidity and mortality, thus making adequate perioperative hemostasis crucial. We investigate the prevalence of acquired von Willebrand syndrome type 2A in congenital heart disease and develop a treatment algorithm for patients with acquired von Willebrand syndrome 2A and congenital heart disease to reduce perioperative blood loss. The design was a retrospective cohort study. The setting was a single-center study. Patients included a total of 627 patients with congenital heart disease undergoing corrective cardiac surgery between January 2008 and May 2017. Interventions. The evaluation of perioperative bleeding risk was based on the laboratory parameters von Willebrand factor antigen, risdiplam cofactor activity, platelet function analyzer closure time adenosine diphosphate, and platelet function analyzer epinephrine. According to the bleeding risk, treatment was performed with desmopressin or von Willebrand factor. Measurements and main results. Acquired von Willebrand syndrome was confirmed in 63.3%, with a prevalence of 45.5% in the moderate group and 66.3% in the high-risk group. In addition, prevalence increased with ascending peak velocity above the stenosis from 40% at less than or equal to 3 meters per second up to 83.3% at greater than 5 meters per second. A treatment algorithm for patients with acquired von Willebrand syndrome type 2A and congenital heart disease reduced mean blood loss by 36.3% in comparison with a historical control cohort with a p-value less than 0.001 without increasing the number of thrombotic or thromboembolic events during the hospital stay. With ascending peak velocity, there was an increase in perioperative blood loss in the historical cohort with a p-value less than 0.001, which was not evident in the cohort who received the treatment algorithm for patients with acquired von Willebrand syndrome 2A and congenital heart disease. The p-value here was equal to 0.23. Conclusions. The prevalence of acquired von Willebrand syndrome type 2A and congenital heart disease seems to be higher than assumed and leads to significantly higher perioperative blood loss, especially at high peak velocity. Identifying these patients through appropriate laboratory analytics and adequate treatment could reduce blood loss effectively. Abstract 7. ICU Admission Tool for Congenital Heart Catheterization, or ICHECH. A predictive model for high-level post-catheterization care and patient management by Quinn et al. Objectives. Currently, there are no prediction tools available to identify patients at risk of needing high-complexity care following cardiac catheterization for congenital heart disease. We sought to develop a method to predict the likelihood a patient will require intensive care-level resources following elective cardiac catheterization. Design. This was a prospective single-center study capturing important patient and procedural characteristics for predicting discharge to the ICU. Characteristics significant at the 0.1 level in the derivation dataset from July 1, 2017 to December 31, 2019 were considered for inclusion in the final multivariable logistic regression model. The model was validated in the testing dataset from January 1, 2020 to December 31, 2020. Collection of the novel pre-procedure cardiac status feature started in January 2019 and was assessed separately in the final model using the 2019 through 2020 dataset. The setting was a tertiary pediatric heart center. Patients included all elective cases coming from home or non-ICU who underwent a cardiac catheterization from July 2017 to December 2020. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A total of 2,192 cases were recorded in the derivation dataset, of which 245 patients, or 11%, were admitted to the ICU, while 1,413, or 64%, were admitted to a medical unit, and 534, or 24%, were discharged home. In multivariable analysis, the following predictors were identified. 1. Weight less than 5 kilograms and 5 to 9.9 kilograms. 2. Presence of systemic illness. 3. Recent cardiac intervention less than 90 days. And 4. ICU admission tool for congenital heart catheterization case type risk categories 1 to 5 with C statistics of 0.79 and 0.76 in the derivation and testing cohorts respectively. The addition of the pre-procedure cardiac status feature fit into the final model resulted in a C statistic of 0.79. Conclusions. The creation of a validated pre-procedural risk prediction model for ICU admission following congenital cardiac catheterization using a large-volume, single-center academic institution will improve resource allocation and prediction of capacity needs for this complex patient population. Abstract 8. Functional Status and Hospital Readmission After Pediatric Critical Disease, A Year Follow-Up, by Peter et al. Objectives. to evaluate the association between pediatric functional status at hospital discharge after PICU admission and hospital readmission within 1 year. Design, prospective longitudinal study. Setting, two PICUs in tertiary hospitals in South Brazil. Patients, children and adolescents admitted to the PICU. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We evaluated the following: clinical and socio-demographic characteristics, functional status using the Functional Status Scale Brazil at baseline and at hospital discharge, and hospital readmission within 1 year. Hospital readmission risk was associated with possible related factors using Cox regression to estimate the hazard ratio. A total of 196 patients completed the follow-up. At hospital discharge, 39.3% of children had some degree of decline in the Functional Status Scale Brazil, and 38.3% had at least one non-elective hospital readmission within 1 year. Functional Status Scale Brazil rating at hospital discharge was associated with the risk of hospital readmission within 1 year, with a hazard ratio of 1.698 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.016 to 2.838. In conclusion, Functional Status Scale Brazil rating at hospital discharge, age, and length of stay were associated with greater hazard of non-elective hospital readmission within 1 year of discharge. Abstract 9. Weight-based versus flat dosing of epinephrine during cardiac arrest in the PICU, a multicenter study by Kinzel et al. Objectives. Pediatric advanced life support guidelines include weight-based epinephrine dosing recommendations of 0.01 mg per kilogram with a maximum of 1 mg, which corresponds to a weight of 100 kg. Actual practice patterns are unknown. Design. Multicenter cross-sectional survey regarding institutional practices for the transition from weight-based to flat dosing of epinephrine during cardiopulmonary resuscitation in PICUs. Exploratory analyses compared epinephrine dosing practices with several institutional characteristics using the Fisher Exact test. The setting was an internet-based survey. Subjects were U.S. PICU representatives, one per institution, involved in resuscitation systems of care. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 137 institutions surveyed, 68 or 50% responded. 67 of 68 or 99% of the responding institutions are freestanding children's hospitals or dedicated children's hospitals within combined adult and pediatric hospitals. 55 or 81% of these are academic, and 41 or 60% have PICU fellowship programs. Among the 68 respondents, 13 or 19% were PICU medical directors, 23 or 34% were resuscitation committee members, and 21 or 31% were attending physicians with an interest in resuscitation. When choosing between weight-based and flat dosing, 64 respondents or 94% reported using patient weight, 23 or 34% used patient age, and 5 or 7% used patient pubertal stage. Among the 64 who reported using weight, 28 of them, or 44%, switch at 50 to less than 60 kilograms, 17 of them, or 27%, switch at 60 to less than 80 kilograms, 5 of them, or 8%, switch at 80 to less than 100 kilograms, and 8 of them, or 12%, switch at greater than or equal to 100 kilograms. Among the 23 who reported using age, 4 of them, or 17%, switch at 14 to less than 16 years old, 5 of them, or 22%, switch at 16 to less than 18 years old, and 6 of them, or 26%, switch at greater than or equal to 18 years old. 29 respondents, or 43%, report using ideal body weight when dosing epinephrine in obese patients. Using patient age and choosing epinephrine dosing is more common in institutions that require advanced cardiac life support or ACLS certification for some or all code team responders compared with institutions that do not require ACLS certification, 52% versus 22% and a p-value equal to 0.02. Conclusions. The majority of PICU surveyed report epinephrine dosing practices that are inconsistent with pediatric advanced life support guidelines. Abstract 10. Lessons and insights from the implementation of the cohort model for a PICU, a case study research by Ninemeyer et al. Objectives. The subspecialty cohort model allows for creation of smaller diagnosis pools, enabling concentration of expertise and collaboration. Given unknown effects of this model on team dynamics in a PICU, we examined how the cohort model implementation was perceived by our providers and how this organizational change affected the work environment. Design. This was a case study research approach consisting of surveys, operational observations, and semi-structured interviews. A descriptive survey was derived from an integrated conceptual framework, that is, teamwork and psychological safety. Sensitized by the framework and quantitative survey data, we conducted a thematic analysis from field notes and interview data. The setting was a quaternary care children's hospital with a 31-bed PICU. Subjects included PICU providers and nurses and subspecialists. The intervention was implementation of the subspecialty cohort model. Measurements and main results. A total of 308 responses from pre-cohort surveys and 269 responses from post-cohort surveys were analyzed. Overall, 76% of physicians and 74% of nurses viewed the cohort model favorably. Three themes emerged: community from disruption to redistribution, transforming identity expert or generalist, and expansive learning from focused practice. The findings provided insights informed by a theory of community of practice as lessons learned and ways to enhance the cohort model. Conclusions. Our transition to a cohort PICU model offers lessons on impacts of PICU model changes on communities and teams. These theory-informed insights and implications can guide others undergoing similar transitions. Abstract 11. Bivalirudin or unfractionated heparin for anticoagulation in pediatric patients on continuous flow ventricular assist device support, a single-center retrospective cohort study, by Puri et al. Objectives. Bivalirudin is a direct thrombin inhibitor that is being increasingly used for anticoagulation in children after ventricular assist device implantation. While the data on bivalirudin use in pulsatile flow ventricular assist devices are growing, reports on its use in patients on continuous flow ventricular assist device as well as comparisons of associated outcomes with unfractionated heparin remain limited. The design was a retrospective cohort study. The setting was a single tertiary quaternary referral center. Patients included all patients less than 21 years old on continuous flow ventricular assist device support who received bivalirudin or unfractionated heparin for anticoagulation between the years 2016 and 2020. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Clinical characteristics compared between the cohorts included time to target range of anticoagulation, markers of hemolysis, and prevalence of hemocompatibility-related adverse events such as major hemorrhagic complications, ischemic stroke, and pump thrombosis. In 42 unique patients during the study period, a total of 67 encounters of IV anticoagulation infusions were retrospectively reviewed. Of the 42 patients, 41 had the HeartWare ventricular assist device, and one had the HeartMate 3 left ventricular assist device. Of the IV anticoagulation infusions, 29 received unfractionated heparin and 38 received bivalirudin. In comparison with use of unfractionated heparin, bivalirudin was associated with lesser odds of major bleeding complications, with an odds ratio of 0.29 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.09 to 0.97 and a p-value equal to 0.038. We failed to identify any difference in odds of major thrombotic complications, with an odds ratio of 2.53, a 95% confidence interval of 0.47 to 13.59, and a p-value equal to 0.45. 8 of the patients, or 28% on unfractionated heparin, were switched to bivalirudin due to hemorrhagic or thrombotic complications or inability to achieve therapeutic anticoagulation, while 2 of the patients, or 5% on bivalirudin, were switched to unfractionated heparin due to hemorrhagic complications. Bivalirudin was used for a washout in 8 cases with concern for pump thrombosis. 6 had resolution of the pump thrombosis, while 2 needed pump exchange. Conclusions. Use of bivalirudin for anticoagulation in patients on continuous flow ventricular assist device support was associated with lesser odds of hemorrhagic complications compared with the use of unfractionated heparin. Bivalirudin washout was successful in medical management of 6 of 8 cases of possible pump thrombosis. Abstract 12, The Relevance of Airway Resistance in Children Requiring Mechanical Ventilatory Support, by Bruno et al. Objectives. To describe pulmonary resistance in children undergoing invasive mechanical ventilation for different causes. Design, a cross-sectional study. Setting, 2 PICUs in the south region of Brazil. Patients, children 1 month to 15 years old undergoing mechanical ventilation for more than 24 hours were included. We recorded ventilator variables and measured pulmonary mechanics, including inspiratory and expiratory resistance, auto positive end expiratory pressure, or PEEP, and dynamic and static compliance in the first 48 hours of mechanical ventilation. Interventions: measurements of the respiratory mechanics variables during neuromuscular blockade. Measurements and main results. A total of 113 children were included. The median age was 5 months old with an interquartile range of 2 to 21.5 months. The median weight was 6.5 kilograms with an interquartile range of 4.5 to 11 kilograms, and 60% of the cohort was male. The median peak inspiratory pressure was 30 centimeters of water with an interquartile range of 26 to 35 centimeters of water, and the median positive end expiratory pressure was 5 centimeters of water with an interquartile range of 5 to 7 centimeters of water. The median inspiratory resistance was 94 centimeters of water per liter per second with an interquartile range of 52.5 to 155.5 centimeters of water per liter per second, and the median expiratory resistance was 117 centimeters of water per liter per second with an interquartile range of 71 to 162 centimeters of water per liter per second. And both of these had a negative association with weight and age, with a Spearman rate correlation coefficient of negative 0.85. When we assessed weight, smaller children less than 10 kilograms had increased pulmonary resistance with mean values over 100 centimeters of water per liter per second, which were higher than larger children, with a p-value less than 0.001. Conclusions: increased pulmonary resistance is prevalent in the pediatric population undergoing invasive mechanical ventilation. Especially in children less than 1 year old, this variable should be considered when defining a ventilatory strategy. Lastly, we've included the PCCM narrative in this month's issue by Dr. Wynn Ellen Morrison, who practices pediatric critical care medicine and palliative care medicine at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Dr. Morrison writes, "Poems can tell stories, often obliquely with a little slant, often filled with the emotion that comes from compressed language. Still, the ones I relate to often contain a very recognizable human moment. With this in mind, I am offering up a different type of narrative for the PCCM narrative section of the journal. My poem below, When One of Them Breaks, grew out of the tension I have felt in my life in my roles as a mother and a PICU attending. The initial working title was After Work, and as often happens, a better title emerged in the writing. Thinking of my patients and my own children, how all our lives are connected, makes me pause. At the same time, seeing the patients and families in the ICU can make me forever grateful for how my own family is doing. Saying it here in prose sounds trite. I hope the poem says it better. Perhaps you will recognize something you have felt yourself. When one of them breaks, we would give anything for what we have." Quote by Tony Hoagland. "The house is dark when I open the door, so you and the kids must be in your beds. When I peek in their rooms, they don't budge. My head against their wall, I study their sleeping faces. Children tucked under their own comforters, so different than the children back at work. Late days usually means there's a family in distress. Parents who haven't made it home, just a hospital bed and a cot. Every one of them having a worse day than me. Through my own girl's window, the street light shines. We haven't managed to put up the curtains. The house of two doctors, lived in but ignored. Thank God they're good sleepers. I crawl into our bed, relieved when you edge closer. I hold you tight enough, but not so hard that I'll disturb you. I feel the guilt of gratitude for all that we have. Each day, a reminder of all we could suffer. We see so many who do. Yesterday, I watched how every tree swayed in the wind, no matter how tall or how solid. Some days bring such strong winds. Do all the trees feel it when one of them bends and breaks? Like the day my daughter saw me on the phone on the sidelines of her soccer game. She couldn't hear the conversation. An update on a patient death. Not unexpected. One drop in an ocean. Only one. Why did Anna stop to give me a hug? A shadow crossing my face. A bridge to the world." This concludes the abstracts for the October issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.